Welcome back to Well, That's Interesting, the Fancy Weapon and a Fucked Up Planet edition.
I'm really excited about this Fancy Weapon.
Oh, it's so fancy.
I'm not going to lie. I love fancy stuff.
Sure.
I love a fancy... restaurant. I love a fancy cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
I love a fancy
weapon.
Love it.
Amazing. Then you came to the right place because today is in betweeny 088 King Tut's meteorite dagger.
That's really fancy.
It's the fanciest you're going to get.
Doesn't get much fancier than that.
And yet another truly hellish exoplanet.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I should know what an exoplanet is by now.
We did do a whole episode once upon a time.
Okay. Many margaritas ago. Yes. We did an episode about it. Do you want to remind me now what an exoplanet is or later?
How about later?
Okay.
Yeah. I'm Jill Chacha, and I am with the woman who's just so excited about exoplanets. Marissa Riley.
That's me. I am thrilled about exoplanets, whatever they are. I'm also freaking thrilled about this dagger.
Oh my God.
I can't wait to talk about it more.
If this is your first time listening, welcome to the flock.
Welcome.
Dr. Riley here comes in cold and learns everything in real time, just like you.
It's true. I had no idea what we were going to talk about today, and I still don't know what half of what we're going to talk about is today.
Good enough.
But I can't wait. Let's do it.
Yes, my friends, today is all about extremes. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk about what happens when the universe gifts humans with ancient space debris and what we turn it into. If you said we probably craft weapons out of it, you're right.
Yeah, so, yeah. Everything can be a weapon or a dildo.
Oh, yeah. don't mix these two up.
No. So,
in the second half of the show, we're going to travel to an exoplanet a mere 850 light years from Earth. But honestly, it could not be any more different than our beautiful, life-giving home. Oh. I don't want to give too much away now, but on your average day there, one side of the planet is a balmy 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit.
I mean...
Jesus Christ.
As someone who grew up in Austin, Texas, where the summer highs were 110... Sometimes 112.
That's insane.
I can say that 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit is too hot.
It's a little bit hotter than that.
It's too hot. No, no amount of leather bikinis and cutoffs will prepare you for that.
That was a very specific outfit. We'll get into that later.
Yep.
That kind of heat creates an environment no mind could possibly make up, no matter how deranged it is. And we're going to talk all about it. We're going to have a lot of fun. I cannot wait.
Let's do it.
But let's begin with everyone's favorite and tragic young king, Tutankhamun.
I am familiar.
Yeah, whose life was cut short at the age of 19.
Yeah.
According to the folks over at a little encyclopedia called Britannica.
Oh, I'm familiar.
Quote, for many years it was believed that the boy king died of an infected broken leg. Mm. However, in 2010, scientists found traces of malaria parasites in Tutankhamun's remains, indicating that malaria, perhaps in combination with a degenerative bone disease, may have been the cause of death. End quote.
I like how it's just so easy to die of like five different things back in the day.
At once.
Like, you think it's easy to die today? Oh my God. They would die of anything.
Yeah, don't break your leg. Don't fall.
Or get bone disease and malaria at the same at the same time at 19.
Oh, 19.
This is wild. But for him that might as well have been like 84. That's a long life.
That is.
Good for Tut.
Good for Tut. Either way, young, old, sudden or expected, when a king dies, you fucking go all out when it comes to burial.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And boy, howdy, if anyone knows how to do that, it's the Egyptians.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Little King Tut was buried within not one, but five tombs configured like a Russian doll of sorts.
Amazing.
His sarcophagus alone was actually three coffins nestled one inside the other. Just amazing. Back in 1923... when English archaeologist Howard Carter and a bunch of other white dudes entered the massive expanse that was Tut's burial plot, there were no less than 5,000 items found within.
You know, I was just on Instagram, and okay. It's funny how much you need something that you didn't know existed 5 seconds ago, and you're like, you just hear about it, and you're like, I need this plastic heart-shaped bikini top.
Yeah.
I need it right now. Instagram just told me to buy it, and I feel the same way with King Tut's burial.
Yeah.
I need...
just in case.
Just,
you never know.
You never know what's going to happen
afterwards.
And I think I need 5 coffins. And I think I need 5,000 pieces of crap with me.
Yeah.
So that if I wake up somewhere really interesting, I have my plastic bikini tops. I have my 8 pairs of tennis shoes that all look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I have everything.
Yeah.
And my face products. I need it all.
Yeah.
Jill, write this down.
I am. Yeah, luckily we
haven't
recorded.
She's not writing it down. Oh, yeah, for recording. Anyways.
Just write it down anyway. So many, many, many of these 5,000 items raised a lot of questions about the teen's life and death, but one dagger really stood out. And Dr. Marissa, I have a photo of it right here, and I'd love for you to take a look. Please just describe it for us and any thoughts you may have.
Yeah.
And of course... all photos we talk about today will be on our social media stuffs, so please come on by and take a look at this dagger. Dr. Marissa, would you be buried with this?
At one,
next to your bikinis.
100%. I need this right next to the bikinis. Mm-hmm. I am going to need this. I actually need this right now.
It's pretty nice.
I don't really need to stab anyone right now. I just want it like on a coffee table. It is, it's so cool. It's gold. It's got a gold handle.
Mm-hmm.
The gold handle has stripes on it, kind of this resiny black, and the gold, horizontal stripes. It's got this cool, like, sort of almost diamond shaped etchings in it.
Yeah.
The very tip of the handle looks like it's a clear glass.
Looks like glass, yeah.
It looks like glass. It's this awesome knob. If I was making a dagger, I would not think to do that, but it really works. And then the actual blade is like, you know, silver blade, classic.
Yeah.
And then it actually has sort of a little bit of wear and tear. These sort of like tarnished spots, mm-hmm. which makes it look even cooler.
Yeah.
It looks like if I went to a vintage store and saw it, I'd be like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I need it because it's so cute.
This dagger, you know, it's been used. It's been stabbed. It's been used to stab things.
Yeah. I hate it. I hate it when people buy like really nice shoes or like a really nice dagger and then they don't use
it. Yeah, use your daggers.
Use
people.
Your designer daggers. Don't be afraid. That's what they're for.
That's right. Yeah. Other than that. So it has a beautiful gold handle, but other than that, it looks like any dagger you'd see in a sword collection belonging to someone named Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin. But on this.
This is definitely a Kevin. It's in there.
Right next to his, like, Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Or his Game of Thrones sword.
Yeah.
I'm one to talk because I used to own the Kill Bill sword.
Yeah, that's right.
A replica, but then I left it at someone's house. I need to call them because I really want it back.
If you have Dr. Marissa's
Javier, if you're listening to this podcast, I really want my sword back.
Oh, God. Let's get to specifics. All right. According to our source study, published in the February 2022 issue of Meteoritics and Planetary Sciences, quote, it consists of a double-edged metallic iron blade and a hilt primarily made of gold.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
The length of the dagger is 14 inches, or 35.2 centimeters, and the iron blade is 8 inches in length, or 21.8 centimeters, end quote.
So I don't know much about daggers. Mm. That sounds like a good size.
It's a good size. A good 8 inches.
So, 8 inches.
Yep.
I'm trying to do it with my hands.
Yes.
I just have no concept of space.
it looks like you're playing the accordion.
Just like all over the place. It sounds great. I still want it, yeah.
So what is the big fucking deal with this dagger, right? Well, here's the curious part. Dr. Marissa, please tell us, according to Isaac Schultz of Gizmodo, what was really unique about this object?
I would love to talk about this. All right, quote, "Its blade was a perplexing discovery, considering the Iron Age didn't kick off until a century after Tut's death." Mm-hmm. End quote. This is ahead of its time.
Of its time, yeah.
That it's even cooler now. Wow, they discovered the band before you did.
That's right. That's right, my friends. Ye old Iron Age was a period in human history between 1200 BC and 600 BC. This was when people across much of Europe, Asia, and Africa began making tools and weapons, of course, from iron and steel on a regular basis, mining ore and smoldering it to perfection.
Mining ore and smoldering it to perfection. That's the coolest thing you've ever said.
So Mr. Tut, well, he died around 1323 BC, well before the Iron Age kicked off in 1200 BC.
Hot damn.
Yeah. In fact, he not only had an iron dagger on him, he had some iron bling as well, including an iron headrest and an iron bracelet.
Oh, Where did it come from? Right. I wonder.
So, yeah, I'm sure you have a few questions like how the fuck? Yeah. Where did that iron come from? And who the fuck made these beautiful things? Well, if you said to yourself, I bet at some point, way, way back in human history, some people figured out that meteors contain a material you can make shit out of. A material like iron. If you thought this, you're absolutely right.
Amazing.
Once upon a time, humans waited for meteors to fall to Earth so they could forge tools and pointy, killy things.
I know I'm not supposed to like this, but I love this.
Yes, it's pretty
I
cool.
love that like there's like people and then you see like a meteor come out of the sky and then they just pick up their bags. They're like, all right, we gotta
Let's
go
do
now.
This. Yep.
And then they just start running. Yeah. Through a field because they didn't have cars. They just start running towards it.
Somebody was on meteor duty. You can't fuck that up. You have to, can you imagine?
There's only so many.
Yes.
I don't know how often they, because I don't think about it very much. But I really have to think
you
about
really
it.
You really got to pay fucking attention. So, Dr. Marissa, please tell us what Albert Jambon from the National Center for Scientific Research in France told Atlas Obscura in an interview.
I would love to talk about it. All right. From the article, "Before the Iron Age, most iron came from space." That's amazing. Quote, "It has been thought, for example, that the iron used by the Egyptians came from an early smelting industry in Anatolia." Anatolia,
Nailed
got it,
it.
Where the Hittites may have started to work iron as early as 1500 BC. Perhaps not coincidentally, some of the oldest records of meteors in the sky are found in cuneiform texts written in Hittite. Jambon believes that they were harvesting their early iron from these celestial omens and then trading some to Egypt. Some archaeologists believed the Hittites invented iron making. That's so cool. He says, but they were hunting meteorites. End quote. So yeah, it's like we said, they're running, grabbing these meteorites, making it. Thank you, Hittites, for
thank you.
For doing this.
Yeah.
It's so damn cool.
It's so cool. Yeah, the Hittites were a small population of super crafters who figured out what to do with all these space rocks.
Amazing. They would have had a killer Etsy store.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
They were the first Etsy.
Oh, mind blown.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. And if you're wondering where in the world Anatolia was, it's the countries we now call Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, and Cyprus.
I'm really glad you said that because that I was
part.
Like, does everyone know where Anatolia is? And I just really missed that day.
I had to look it up. So.
Okay, wonderful.
So just to put this region's incredible innovation into context, Europeans and the West, quote, really didn't take notice of meteorites until the 16th century or so.
It's embarrassing.
End quote. Yes. Europeans didn't bother with meteors until the 1500s AD, and the Hittites were like experts as early as 1500 BC. So,
dude, get it together. Yeah. If you see something falling out of the sky, you better check that shit out.
Yeah.
Stop being lazy and being like, I don't fucking care. Go get it and make some fucking jewelry out of it, you lazy fucking dipshits. I don't know why I'm so passionate about this. Wow. Do whatever you want.
And that quote was from Atlas Mascara. So do whatever you want. So my friends, let's fast forward to 2016.
Okay.
When a chemical analysis of the dagger was performed. And yes, it was confirmed. The blade was made from a meteor.
That's so cool. Damn.
Yeah. But of course, this raised a couple of more questions, like what kind of meteor, and honestly, who gave this dagger to Tut?
Excellent questions.
Yeah, researchers had their money on something called an octahedrite meteor.
Okay.
And Dr. Marissa, our resident rock lover here.
That's me.
Yeah. Please tell us, what the hell is that?
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about some octahedrites. From the wiki, quote, octahedrites are the most common structural class of iron meteorites. They derive their name from their crystal structure, paralleling an octahedron. Due to a long cooling time in the interior of the parent asteroid, the materials crystallize into intermixed millimeter-sized bands. When polished, the classic Widmansdinton patterns of intersecting lines are visible. End quote. All right, I want to process this for 1 second. So it sounds like when the interior is cooling,
you got it.
For like a piece of it is cooling, it crystallizes, and kind of creates this cool pattern.
You got it.
Amazing.
That's exactly it.
Amazing. We're going to see this, right?
We're still going to see this.
Okay, cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture it, but I'm like...
Yes, exactly. It's really hard to explain the Widmansdinton pattern, so I'm just going to show you what a cross-section of an absolutely beautiful octahedrite meteor looks like.
Yeah.
And it will tell you everything you need to know. And of course, this photo is on our social media stuff. Just come on by and look at how fucking gorgeous the interior of this meteor is.
God.
Here it is.
I mean, this is everything.
Oh my God.
And more. This is the coolest fucking thing in the world. First of all, it reminds me a little bit of a geode where like it's like a kind of like a rock, classic rock on the outside, and then you cut it and inside is just magic to behold. Like it's just like, who knew?
Yes.
Who fucking knew?
Yeah.
Except in this case, it's like, imagine like iron. Let's imagine that because that's what it is. And then imagine, like, etched on or inside of it is these sort of crisscross diagonal lines. But it's so cool. It's just, like, crisscrossed etched lines all through it. And since they crisscross, they kind of create these little triangles. And it's just so gorgeous. Yeah. I'm not really doing it justice. Please look at this picture.
It's so aesthetically pleasing.
It's really, I want it right now. Can we get one?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm assuming we can Etsy.
Yeah, or just watch the skies.
Just wait.
Constantly.
Fair. Okay, so, let's get on the roof.
So, was this dagger made from this gorgeousness? And really, there's only one way to find out.
Oh, okay.
From Isaac Schultz, once more, quote, to understand the manufacturer and origin of the dagger, we conducted an on-site, non-contact, non-destructive, two-dimensional chemical analysis, said study co-author Tomoko Ari, a researcher at the Chiba Institute of Technology in Japan.
Now, this is the coolest thing ever that they can do this without, like, hold on.
Yeah.
Not touching it?
Didn't have to. Not at all.
Magic.
It's fucking incredible.
I fucking love science.
Continuing the quote, the researchers mapped the elemental structure of the blade by shining X-rays onto it, revealing concentrations of iron, nickel, manganese, and cobalt. In the blackened spots of the blade, they found sulfur, chlorine, calcium, and zinc. But just as interesting as the elements present was their distribution.
Ooh.
And quote. So, Dr. Marissa, it's up to you now.
Okay.
Yeah. Please take a look at their distribution. Now, this is on a molecular level, so it's super close up. Okay. Imagine the photo we just saw, and then we zoom right the fuck in.
Okay.
So do they form the same intersecting lined pattern as the octahedrite sample?
Okay.
Here it is.
So my answer is yes?
Yeah.
Question mark? I will say this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. It is a lot like the one I saw. It's just more detailed. Yeah. It's like, imagine like lines in different shades of like white, gray, and silver and black. And it's these diagonal lines, they're intersecting, but it's like, this is a two-dimensional picture, but it looks so three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like these lines keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. And I want to buy this.
Yeah.
Not like the material. I want to buy that too, but I want to buy this picture.
It would make a great print. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so gorgeous.
Yeah. It's beautiful crosshatching.
Yeah.
That's what creates that illusion of depth. It's just.
And it looks like paint. It looks like someone painted this and like, you know, went to art school and stuff. Good for them. Good for
The meteor.
Yes.
So co-author Tomoko Ari went on to say, quote, "We noticed a cross-hatched texture present in places for both sides of the dagger, suggesting Vinmonstatten structure typical of an octahedrite iron meteorite. That was our wow moment."
Fuck yeah.
End quote.
Amazing.
So, if a weapon melted down from a cosmic meteor and given to a dead royal isn't poetry enough for you, there's still the question of who gave it to the late boy.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Dr. Marissa, dust off your archaeological hat or archaeologist hat, whatever.
Yes.
Would you like to tackle this together?
Fuck yeah.
All right. Why don't you take it away?
Let's do it. All right. From the Gizmodo article, King Tut's meteorite dagger has a mystery origin story. I'm so here for it. Quote, "Though the chemical analysis didn't offer clues to the dagger's origins, the team turned to a series of 3,400-year-old tablets known as the Amarna letters, which document diplomatic activities in ancient Egypt in the mid-14th century BCE." So kind of like their wiki.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The letters mention an iron dagger in a gold sheath.
Oh, yeah.
Presumably not a common accessory back then, that was given to Amenhotep III, Tutankhamun's grandfather.
Oh.
It was given to him by the king of Mitanni, the region of Anatolia, when Amenhotep married his daughter. End quote.
That was a lot of really
yes.
big words, and you fucking nailed it. So it sounds like it was given down... It was passed down to him
yes.
by his grandfather.
Yep.
So they've had this for a long fucking time.
It's even older than they thought. Yeah.
Wow.
This may have been a wedding gift turned family heirloom, and a fucking ancient one at that. They believe it was crafted between 1350 and 1400 BC, way before the Iron Age.
That's so fucking
so
cool.
So what a ride that meteor has taken, my friends, traveling through space, passing down a line of kings, to finally being talked about on this show.
Yeah.
Clearly the most important moment of its life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Finally.
It's made it onto, well, that's interesting,
that's right.
The podcast extraordinaire.
There you go. After the break, we're leaving Earth. We're leaving Earth and heading to a land where it rains liquid sapphires.
Of course we are.
And trust me, that really sucks. Trust me.
I can imagine.
stay tuned.
Please do.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship.
We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, Jill Chacha here from Well That's Interesting, and I am absolutely thrilled to tell you about Spotify for Podcasters. I use it, I love it, and it all started by downloading the free Spotify for Podcasters app, which has all the tools you need in one place to record and edit your masterpiece of a podcast. Spotify for Podcasters also distributes your show to all major platforms. So when you hit publish, your episodes will stream not only on Spotify, but I'm talking about the Apples, the Googles, Stitcher, Good Pods, the other ones. You get the idea. And you can monetize your podcast with no minimum listenership required. You could also set up monthly subscriptions and record ads just like this one. So what are you waiting for? Download Spotify for Podcasters today and start changing the world. Oh, and please, stay interesting. And we're back.
We are so back.
We're so back. And my friends, move over Hot Girl Summer.
Oh!
That's right. Today, it's all about misshapen hot Jupiter.
Oh, my God. What? What?
This is one way to describe the unfortunately named exoplanet WASP-121b.
That is so unfortunate.
Terrible name.
I could get into why that's unfortunate. It's just hilarious, though. That's amazing.
It gets even better.
So, oh, God.
Before we talk about what in the holy hell is taking place on WASP-121b, you're probably wondering where it is exactly.
So, yeah.
It's not within our solar system,
okay.
But it is pretty damn close in terms of space.
Okay.
It's within our galaxy.
Okay.
Just a stone throw away at 850 light years.
Only 850 light years mm-hmm. away.
That's right.
That I feel like that should be a country song. I would sing it, but I don't want to make anyone unsubscribe.
So if you're in the southern hemisphere, you're in luck. It falls within the constellation Puppis.
Oh.
Which sounds adorable, but translates to poop deck.
Oh.
I told you this gets better.
Sorry. Yeah. That's okay. It's so funny. Okay.
Now, if you're wondering why in God's name a section of the sky is called poop deck,
I am.
I did too, and I looked it up, and a poop deck is the roof of a cabin built in the rear of the ship, subsequently also forming an additional deck. So it's the roof of this room, also making a deck.
So it's not actually like a poop.
It's just
space. It's just a really unfortunate name.
Yes.
That we should probably change.
It's too late.
It's too late.
It's just too many centuries have gone by.
Oh, God.
So this poop deck in the sky is part of an even larger constellation called Argo Navis, or the Ship of Jason and the Argonauts. So
all right.
That's why.
Fuck yeah, Jason.
So
on the novice.
Yeah, on the novice. Let's ride this poop deck 850 light years towards WASP-121b. And when we finally get there, the first thing we'd notice about this planet, well, Dr. Marissa, according to Alfredo Carpinetti of IFLScience.com, what exactly would we see?
All right, let's talk about it. Okay, quote, the planet is only 2.4 million miles from its star, or 2.5% of the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Its high temperature makes it bloated?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
And combined with the strong pull from its Earth, it is deformed.
From its Sun.
From its Sun. Okay. I'm going to say this all again because it's so interesting and it kind of describes how like a rough day for me sounds. But quote, its high temperature makes it bloated and combined with the strong pull from its sun, it is deformed. Mm-hmm. Instead of being sort of spherical, the planet looks more like an American football. End quote.
Yep.
I mean, like, so that's how I feel after eating a lot of French fries and Indian food. Something I have eaten both in one day. Yeah. And it's a weird
feeling. Shame.
No shame. No shame. I have gone into American football shape for sure. But for a planet, this sounds a little
bonkers, right?
Weird.
It is weird.
How does that work, Jill?
Yeah, let's get into it. Now, if 2.4 million miles sounds way too close to be next to a star, yeah, you're right. For context, Mercury, the planet in our solar system closest to the sun, Mercury is 36 million miles away.
That's wild.
From our star. This planet is a mere 2.4 million, so it's single digits.
So she hot.
She is super hot.
She's super hot.
Super bloated.
So. Oh, God.
So what does it mean to be rubbing up against a ball of nuclear fire? Well, terrible things.
Yeah.
First, being so close, it's tidally locked. Okay. Meaning one side is permanently facing its sun.
Ouch! No!
Yeah.
No! Summer all year long.
All year long. Eternal day on one side and eternal night on the other.
That's creepy.
Second, quote, WASP-121b has one of the shortest orbits detected to date, circling its star in just 30 hours, end quote.
So that's like a year.
It's a year.
30-hour year.
Yeah, its year is 30 hours long. It's insane.
It's not enough time to get anything done.
No, it's not. And that quote was from news.mit.edu. Something else we'd notice about old WASPy as we pull up, it's massive. It's a massive gas giant nearly twice the size of Jupiter.
Oh, a gas giant.
Yes. You okay? It's all right. I got
it
her.
It sounds so funny. Her. Twice the size of Jupiter. Okay, keep talking. I'm good. I'll be fine.
Gas giants. And the upper atmosphere facing its sun is a staggering 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit or 2,300 degrees Celsius on average.
It's hot and gassy.
That's right.
And big.
I told you. Yes. And we love her.
We love her.
We so
love
much.
Her. How relatable, yeah. Though. You know, finally. Yeah. A relatable planet.
That's right. Needless to say, this has very interesting and practically devastating effects on the molecules in that atmosphere, and thus making some crazy-ass weather.
I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Now, let's start with the water molecules. Okay. Yes, H2O has been detected on this planet, but don't get your hopes up.
Okay.
Dr. Marissa, according to MIT, what the fuck is going on with this?
All right, let's... talk about it. I'm so worried. Quote, on Earth, water recycles by first evaporating, then condensing into clouds, then raining out. We're familiar. Mm-hmm. On WASP-121b, the water cycle is far more intense. On the day side, the atoms that make up water are ripped apart at temperatures over 4,900 degrees Fahrenheit. These atoms are blown around to the night side where the colder temperatures allow hydrogen and oxygen atoms to recombine into water molecules, which then blow back to the day side where the cycle starts again. Researchers calculate that the planet's water cycle is sustained by winds that whip the atoms around the planet at speeds of up to 11,000 miles per hour or 5 kilometers per second, end quote. Mm-hmm. This planet is a hot mess.
Yes.
What a mess. Yes. I cannot even begin to fathom. What a day.
11,000 mile per hour winds. It sounds insane.
What are you even doing, girl? Are you okay?
Calm down.
Extra. Do people still call people extra?
She's extra.
She's extra.
Jesus. So if you're wondering... if 11,000 mile per hour winds are fast, for context, the highest wind speed ever recorded on Earth occurred on Barrow Island, Australia.
Okay.
Of course, Australia. Yeah. On April 10th, 1996, an unmanned weather station measured a single 253-mile-per-hour wind gust during Tropical Cyclone Olivia. So one kind of fast wind gust here on Earth.
I'm really glad that weather station was unmanned. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine if guy was just, like, holding his cup of coffee looking outside at, like, houses just like Wizard of Oz style, just spinning around. He's just like, texting home, like, I'm gonna be late.
Jesus. So, God, which job would you rather have, that job or the meteor job?
Don't put me in this position. Don't put me in this position.
Too much pressure.
Too much pressure.
So, my friends, the day side is so damn hot. The Astronomical Journal reports, quote, the planet is being stripped of hydrogen and helium, the lightest elements. Okay. As these gases are siphoned by the star, other elements escape too, including iron and magnesium in gas form.
What?
Yeah. Quote, heavy metals have been seen in other hot Jupiters before, but only in the lower atmosphere, lead researcher David Singh of Johns Hopkins University said in a statement. So you don't know if they're escaping or not. With WASP-121b, we see magnesium and iron gas so far away from the planet, they're no longer gravitationally bound.
Oh.
End quote.
So this is metals into gas form.
Yeah.
Flying out, yes. Leaving the gravitational pull and just
floating away.
Going away.
Iron in gas form? I can't even. I have no idea how to even imagine that. Well done.
Little farts. Little iron farts.
Yeah.
Just leaving the planet.
That's a tough day. Oh, girl.
We both just had to, like, take a breath.
So, since we're on the topic of iron, if iron is being stripped on the day side, you're probably wondering what's happening to it on the night side.
Oh, my God. I wasn't, but I am now.
Oh, sorry. Dr. Marissa, our resident meteorologist.
That's me.
Please tell us what's happening to these molecules and what weather is being produced.
Let's get into it. All right. From the MIT article, a hot Jupiter's dark side is revealed in detail for the first time. Quote, it also appears that water isn't alone in circulating around the planet. The astronomers found that the night side is cold enough to host exotic clouds of iron and corundum, a mineral that makes up rubies and sapphires. So just pausing the quote, quickly recapping, they have clouds of iron.
Yeah.
And a mineral that makes up rubies and sapphires. So it's very sparkly clouds.
Trippy, man. Yeah.
I really want to see that. Okay, I'm going to continue the quote now while I leave you all with that. continuing the quote, these clouds, like water vapor, may whip around to the day side, where high temperatures vaporize the metals into gas form once more. On the way, due to a difference in temperature, exotic rain may be produced, such as liquid gems from the corundum clouds. End quote. I mean, I feel like we all just went on an acid trip.
Holy
together.
Shit. Yes, we did.
I can't even begin to imagine. Is there any way that we could put a camera on this planet? Just put it in, like, a really shielded ball. Yes. And just have it just,
or just take acid, a little LSD trip.
No
okay.
I really want to I just want to see it. That's so cool. I know it's so physically impossible to see, we can think about
it. So if y'all are wondering what temperatures are on the night side that could sustain iron clouds and sapphire clouds, that would be a cool 2800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Chilly. Wow.
Super
chill.
Super chill. Last but certainly not least, this entire weather pattern, thanks to the planet's winds and mere 30-hour orbit, this entire weather pattern circles WASP-121b in a mere 20 hours.
I can't. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's too fast. It's too fast.
Too fast.
I'm not ready. No. I don't think we should go.
No,
we're good. Off the list.
Totally fine. So a gentle reminder that this football is also nearly twice the size of Jupiter as well. So that's, I just can't.
No, none of us can. This is too much.
So hug the earth sometime today.
We just grabbed Jill instead. Yeah. I'm just so happy we're here.
So happy.
Let's take care. Let's recycle. That's what I'm doing right after this.
Yeah. The end.
The end. That's right.
Thank you for listening, rating, subscribing, telling your friends about this horrible, horrible planet. And
fucking awesome dagger.
Jesus, that's so cool.
So cool.
Just, yeah.
I want it.
And please, stay interesting.
Please do.